Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. Mike Popova couldn't be with us today, but I got Pat Donahue here. Pat, we're going to talk mostly basketball today for good reason, but I do want to start with the football team. Started off with a 5-0 record, four straight losses, coming off of a blowout loss to Penn State, and then we didn't record one of these the week before, but they lost to Northwestern off the bye week. Just want to get your overall thoughts on this slide, because from where I sit, it seems like, you know, they start off 5-0, they go up to Ohio State, an emotional loss, a game that they had chances in, but they weren't able to come away with the win. And instead of using that as kind of a springboard to, oh, we're ready to compete, let's continue playing hard, they give up. I mean, yeah. The lack of effort is kind of staggering, and it feels like 2019 Maryland came back from Columbus and lost to Illinois. They lose to Northwestern. They're now 0-5 after bye weeks under Mike Locksley and lose to Penn State in a blowout fashion. And, you know, there's certain trends I'm seeing, but what are you seeing from this team right now?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough to say what it is, because I'm sure if we knew, we could dive in a little bit deeper, and if they knew, they'd probably correct it. But to me, I almost wonder if there's something internally going on that's kind of breaking this team at the seams. Because I mean, I don't know if it's the last time we spoke. I know it's been a couple weeks, but you know, following that Ohio State loss, the sentiment was still pretty positive because it was a good year. We still had five wins in the bank, and you know, that wasn't our worst showing against Ohio State, especially in Columbus. So I left that loss feeling kind of encouraged. And you would think, as you said, you know, that the players felt the same way and could have springboarded that into, you know, even if you're going to have somewhat of a letdown in the Illinois Northwestern stretch, you can't lose them both. And then I don't think anyone expected the Penn State game to be a win. But the fact that it unraveled so quickly when it was a relatively close game in the first half there, you know, and honestly, if you watched the game, the score was close for a while, but it never really felt that close. I mean, it was pretty much a beatdown. And like you said, it felt like we really kind of rolled over, especially at home. I don't know. What I'm seeing is what you're seeing. I'm seeing a team that had its whole season still in front of them in terms of, you know, getting to 7-8, however many wins, getting to a bowl game, and all of that's still ahead of them. And for whatever reason, just has kind of laid egg after egg and is just kind of a dead dog rolling over at this point. And the thing that you mentioned, the stat about the 0-5 after the bye in the Locksley era, I mean, that's just uncalled for. That is crazy when you have extra time to prepare and you can't get one of those wins. Something has to be done. I'm not exactly sure what it is yet, but I think we're all kind of fed up with the current state of the football program, especially when we got a kind of a glimmer of hope early in this year just to be disappointed like this.
Yeah, and look, I think, you know, Mike Locksley, we've all been pretty positive about him. And I think overall, no matter how this season turns out, even if they lose out, I think you can still look back at the last 5 years and say the job he's done has been successful. He's done good things in the program. He's raised the floor, especially considering the situation that he inherited in 2019, where he was only one of three people to even apply for the job. You know, came into a volatile situation with dealing with recruits and parents and, you know, asking parents to entrust him with their children after just 6 months before the program had killed Jordan McNair under DJ Durkin. So from that, the program's obviously in a better state, but it's pretty clear that the ceiling should be higher than it is currently under Mike Locksley. He's had 5 years. And let's be clear, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be here at least two or three more years. He signed a contract extension. Unless a booster is willing to pay up $15 or so million in the next couple of years, he's not going anywhere. So he's going to have time to turn this thing around. But it just feels like this is a turning point. And they're really at risk for a lot more apathy within the program, where you were building it up and this was your year. And you went out and said this was your year because you said, we're going to compete for Big Ten championships. And then you come out and do shit like this.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating as fans. I'm sure it's frustrating for them, but you got to start looking at Mike Locksley, and a lot of the blame needs to start falling on him, because we talk about lack of effort. He talks a lot about this being a players-led team. Well, that's great, but if the players aren't leading right, then the coaches need to step in. And there's some sort of, I mean, with a stretch like this, there's got to be some sort of a lack of leadership in that locker room.
Yeah, and the most concerning thing, and I think where fans are starting to come to the realization of, is that there are no reserves in the tank for coming in for after this year. I mean, Talia, he'll be done after this year. And if you're not going to win with this quarterback and the talent that we've built over, you know, Locksley's last couple years here, when is it going to happen? What is next year going to look like when you don't have a quarterback and you don't have any certainty really across the board? So, like you said, it could get worse before it possibly gets better, and it could lead to a lot more apathy, which is the last thing this program needs, because they were just starting to it seemed like they were starting to separate themselves from the bottom of the Big Ten and approach the top of the Big Ten. And now who knows where they're at and how they're going to show up even against the bottom of the Big Ten.
Yeah. And you just hope, I mean, obviously you hope Locksley can turn this around and that they're able to have some success the next few years, but you just hope at the very least that it doesn't slide so much further back down the hill that the program's in an even worse state when they have to go hire a new head coach. Because that's kind of what you're thinking about now, is like, well, if they start back to the 3 or 4 wins a year thing the next few years, it's like we're back to the drawing board. We're back to where we were in 2019. We were back to where we were at the end of Edsel's era. I mean, it's a scary thought. And you know, you look at all the resources that have been put into this program and the salary that Locksley's making, and it's a scary thought to think what this football program could become. Now, I will say, looking at the way this team's playing now, it might not be the worst thing to have kind of a clean house next year where you're losing a lot of guys. Like, look, you know, you can't, it removes sort of a blame, you know, you can't blame the players. They're all new next year. So see what you can do with those guys. You know, maybe some changes in the coaching staff. I don't know. You know, you'd hope Kevin Sumlin would be gone after his stupidity over the bye week getting a DUI down in Florida. But something's got to change, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next year, because, like I said, Locksley's going to be here for probably the next 2, probably 3 years at least.
Right, right. And you would hope, because he's spoken about this numerous times, about building the culture in College Park and really laying a foundation that could, you know, last far beyond, you know, his time in College Park and actually establish something for Maryland moving forward. And it just doesn't feel like that's happening. It feels like we were starting to, maybe we had our, you know, red colored glasses on and we were hoping for the best, but it just seems like the culture around this program is as bad as it's ever been. And that's sad, because you would at least hope that there'd be something positive to hand off to the next regime, whenever that is. It's just really tough to see right now, following 4 straight losses, 2 of which were just uncalled for.
Yeah, and you look at the next 3 games. I mean, Nebraska on the road, not exactly a gimme. They're going to play you tough, especially, we talked about this before the year, where maybe they weren't supposed to be much earlier in the year, but Matt Rhule's had almost a full season to get his guys going, figure some things out. At Nebraska is never tough. Home against Michigan, I mean, dear God, that's going to, I mean, at this point, you probably expect that to be a bloodbath. And then you go to Rutgers, and Rutgers is playing really well. They just played Ohio State tough at home. They've already got 6 wins. They're going to a bowl game. They're probably at the point in their program that Maryland was maybe last year, where they've got a good amount of talent, a couple good recruiting classes, and they're starting to play the big boys tough. They haven't knocked one of them off yet, but they're starting to do that. So, I mean, there's a legitimate scenario. We talked about a few weeks ago, hey, there's a legit scenario where Maryland wins 9 games. Well, now it's a legit scenario where Maryland only has 5 and misses a bowl game.
When was the last time a team started 5-0 and didn't make a bowl game?
That's a good stat to look up. Yeah.
Yeah. It might be a Maryland team, honestly. I do feel like there were some years where we thought this sort of same thing, like, oh, a bowl game's a lock, only to get to that last game against Rutgers and either win or lose that for bowl. But yeah, it just, you know, I think the moral of the story is it's just from what looked like a really promising, one of the best Maryland football seasons we've seen in quite some time. After the last month, it feels like the same old, same old. It feels like just another mirror image of every Maryland football season we've seen, you know, for the past however many, 20, 30, you name it, years. It's a real shame. But, you know, these last three games, if they can right the ship, win one of them, they'll go to a bowl game. If they can win two of them and get to seven wins, I think we'll forget a lot about the last month if they can finish strong.
One thing to keep in mind, if they do get to seven wins, Loxley's here another year. His contract automatically extends by a year if they win seven games. So some fans might be rooting against the seven wins, depending on what your feelings are about.
Well,
Mike Loxley.
At least the head coach is incentivized then.
That's true.
To want to win these games, so I'll take it.
I did see a stat they put up on the TV on Fox during the last game. Mike Loxley, since he became the head coach in 2019, I believe it's a winning percentage over 80% in August and September and below 20% the rest of the year.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's bad.
Yeah.
He's, I think, 12-26 now in Big Ten play. And it's worse if you include his time as an interim head coach in 2015, which probably isn't fair, but 12-26 is not good.
No. Not going to get it done.
So we're going to move on to basketball because this is depressing. And basketball is fun, and it's basketball season. I know we were texting with Mike earlier, and he said, is it basketball season yet? And yes, it is. It starts today. We're recording this on Monday. Maryland's first game tomorrow, Tuesday night, against Mount St. Mary's. And then a quick turnaround. They go to Asheville, North Carolina, for a tournament this weekend, two games. So I know you've switched into basketball mode as far as your articles up at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. So everybody be sure to check those out. But just give me your initial sense in kind of the research that you've done and kind of getting into basketball mode, your initial sense for this team and how far that they can go this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this team this year. You know, it's coming at the right time, I guess, with the football team doing what they're doing and the basketball team coming into the season with some high hopes and plenty of talent across the board. What I really like about this roster, and I, you know, diving in a little bit deeper into it and the schedule and all of that, is the balance that this roster has, not only from a skill set standpoint, but from an age and experience standpoint. I think that it's got everything that you would want to see from a college basketball team that has the tools to make a run or to win a conference title. You know, I love having a senior point guard at the helm. That's always been a good thing for Maryland. I love having an experienced front court. And I like that, you know, Kevin Willard, I think, really got the not only the fan base, but the team, the whole program to really buy in his first year with a successful first season. So I don't think there's any reservation. I mean, it was tough those last couple of years with Turgeon when you knew we had talented teams, but there was still half the fan base kind of calling for Turgeon's head. And you know, you could just feel even the stress coming off of Mark Turgeon because he knew every game his job was kind of not necessarily literally on the line, but he just knew every time he lost, he was going to have, you know, 50 to 60% of the fan base calling for his firing. And, you know, and that's just, it's just a weird vibe after so many years of that too. So this is a lot more of like a positive high hopes type of vibe, coming into it. And I think that can really serve them well. Cause I see a pretty wide open Big Ten. I mean, there's a couple teams like Purdue, Michigan State who are picked at, you know, to, be one of the top teams or be the top team in the Big Ten. But I think Maryland's going to be right there. And I look at their rosters, I look at our roster, I don't see any reason why, you know, we shouldn't be a top three team in the Big Ten, which, you know, you would think lends itself to being probably a top five, if not a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. So that's kind of where my head's at right now. And I know they've made a couple preseason polls, ranked polls. I think they'll be right around that 20 to 25 number 20 to 25 ranked team in the country to start the year, and we'll see what they do with that and where they go from there. But I'm excited because we need some positive vibes in College Park. And I think this team, especially with Jameer Young, I'm really excited to see what he can do in his final year and pick up right where he left off last season.
Yeah, like you said, having that senior point guard to lead the show is a big deal. We saw what he could do last year. It seems like he grew in confidence as the year went on. Obviously, yeah, coming from a lesser program in Charlotte, I mean, he really performed well all year, but especially towards the end of the year. So it'll be exciting to see what he can, those next steps that he can take as a leader on the court, running this offense with another year of experience in it. Yeah. You mentioned the freshmen, and I think if you're going to have freshmen at any spots, you'd want them at the two and the three, where you can kind of hide the inexperience just a little bit, especially at the beginning of the year. And that's kind of what I'm looking for to start the year. How ready are these guys, and how much work do they need to do to get ready by the time Big Ten play comes around? You know, Deshaun Harris Smith is getting kind of a ridiculous amount of press. They're talking about him maybe being Big Ten Freshman of the Year already. You know, how good can he be? Because it seems like he's a perfect player in a Willard system where he's tough on both sides of the ball, plays really physically, good in the pick and roll. Maybe his jump shot could use a little bit of work, but should be a good pick and roll partner offensively with Julian Reese and Dante Scott, and then defensively pesky as can be.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head to start your segment there, was that the having the freshmen who are expected to probably play the biggest roles in Harris, Smith, and Kaiser at the two and the three really helps, because you're looking for them to provide some scoring, provide some sparks, and also use their athleticism on the defensive end. But you're not necessarily, you know, relying on them to be ball handlers or facilitators or really have to take over a game. And kind of going back to Jameer Young real quickly, the thing that I probably am most excited about him is just the kind of the clutch gene he showed last year, and his ability to want the ball in his hands at the end of the game. And not only that, but to come through in those situations, kind of has a little Mello, Trimble, Des Wells vibe to him. And in that regard, at least. So I think having, you know, that taken care of with one of your experienced seniors and leaders, and then you can let the freshmen grow at their own pace and just naturally provide what they can provide with their skill sets. I do think that is one thing that really sets up well for this team. And yeah, I mean, all the press that Harris Smith is getting nationally, I think it's warranted. I mean, he's a long, athletic guard. He can shoot a bit, and like you said, he fits the Willard mold, kind of the gritty two way player mold, the three and D type guy. Kaiser, same type of deal. And I think I wrote it in my most recent piece for BSL is the five things that I think has Maryland in a position to really overachieve this year. One of them being Willard has his guys this year. He has his recruiting class that fit the personality and skill set that he was looking for to round out this team. Plus he's got his returning upperclassmen who have been bought in since last year. So I think it's really all going to mesh well together from a skill and personality standpoint. And I'm just really excited to see, these freshmen get their feet wet, not only Kaiser and Harris Smith, but Lamont and some of the other guys as well.
Yeah, Willard talked about this being the best freshman class he's ever had, which is exciting. I'm sure it's exciting for him. I'm excited to see Kaiser. I've been high on him for a while just because he fits what Maryland has needed for a while, which is a spot-up three-point shooter.
Yeah.
That guy that you can go to in those situations where you got to have a three, scheme him open off of screens, get the ball in his hands, catch and shoot. And if, look, he's a freshman, so maybe it doesn't happen for the entirety of this year. Maybe it starts to come on at the end of the year, but just having a guy like that in the program to develop is, like you said, that 3-and-D guy. That's something that Maryland needed last year. I mean, shit, Ian Martinez was like their best three-point shooter all year. Right, that can't happen. I mean, he was good, but come on.
But that's what I also mean about like getting your guys is like when you inherit a roster like that and you don't have a full recruiting class coming in your first year, it's like you're just trying to piecemeal fill some spots on the roster and some roles that aren't really who you would have in that under normal circumstances. So yeah, I think this year he just has a much more complete roster, he'll have a lot more roster flexibility, Willard that is. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Kaiser in particular coming from IMG Academy, that's big time basketball. So he'll probably be a freshman who isn't as wide-eyed as some others would be. in that situation. So yeah, I know from talking to people around the program, people who cover the program, that they're expecting big things, especially out of those two, Harris Smith and Kaiser, early on. And I think they're going to get them. But I also think the other freshmen can really contribute as well.
Well, I know Mehdi Traore, the French guy that they were able to add this year. He's a sophomore, 6'11". I know Chris Nockey was talking about him and talking about how just kind of a freak athlete he is at 6'11", with skills on the pick and roll, able to defend a little bit. He's a little small at 195, so still needs to bulk up a bit. But that front court, obviously having Scott and Reese as the experienced guys back is important. But who is behind them is kind of the biggest question mark for this team. Willard's talked about playing Reese a little bit more at the four this year, potentially to keep him out of foul trouble. He's developed, I think, a little bit better shot in the offseason, so it'll be interesting to see that. But in order to do that, you got to have guys at the five. Now, whether that's Traore, whether it's Swanton Roger, I know that he's talked about Jordan Geronimo, the senior they added from, what, Indiana, how important he's going to be to this team. I mean, am I wrong to see him as kind of a Patrick Emilian type, where he's a little undersized at 6'6", but really long and has a potential to still defend at a high level at the five?
Yeah, well, when you started rattling off some, like Matty Traore and some of the other names, and I was thinking, you know, Geronimo, I could see coming in and the five in like a small lineup situation. Yeah. I don't know if I would see him playing the five with Reese necessarily playing the four. I'm trying to think a scenario of like if they put Reese at the four, is it Scott that is then shifting into the five? Is it, you know, do you bring in Braden Pierce because he's 7 foot tall, even though he's right. a freshman? Do you try out Traore or one of those guys? I don't know, but I do think it's good that this roster, especially when you're talking about some of the bigger guards and bigger wings that they're going to have, can play a small ball lineup with potentially you give Reese a breather, and maybe you give Reese and Scott a breather since they're going to be playing together for most of the time, and then you get, you know, say Geronimo at the five, and then you can have even Kaiser or one of these other wings like a Bachelor or someone who's about like 6'5", 6'6", step into a four, and then you still have your guards and your wings out there, yeah. you know, scoring. I'm sure we'll see a lot of different lineup combinations throughout the year, but I do think that this roster gives Willard the ability to either do a bigger lineup or a smaller lineup, but I don't necessarily – I think the biggest and most well-rounded, I guess, physically lineup that they're going to have is probably going to be with Reese at the five and Scott at the four.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Willard kind of messes with those lineups early in the year, because that's when you're really going to be looking. Obviously, you have some big games on the schedule. If they end up facing Clemson in this tournament, that'll be your third game with a borderline top 50 KenPom rated team. And then you got to go play Villanova, who's right around ranked around Maryland. Then you got UCLA not too far after that.
So I want the good teams, though.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I want us to play. I don't want any upsets where Clemson's getting upset by UAB. Like, I want to play as many good teams as we can early, so it boosts the resume and so we can actually see what we have early on. It's sometimes it's really tough to know, you know, or it's easy to get excited when you're blowing out, you know, Delaware State and things like that. I think that's who Penn State's playing tonight. That's the only reason that school came to my mind. But I want to see us, especially when you have a good talented roster like this and aspirations of being a tournament team, I want to see them test themselves early so that they're not shell-shocked when they get into Big Ten play or not battle-tested at the end.
And one thing they were able to do is they were in Italy for a few weeks this summer, which with a new team or a team with a lot of new additions, especially young guys, I'm sure that was a good bonding experience for the team. Got to play some other teams for once. I know they do a couple scrimmages once they got back, but play some other teams with some other types of players on it. So I'm sure that played a role. We've seen other teams do that in the past, and Michigan's big into that, especially in the football side. But that I think could play a big role as far as this team coming together maybe a little bit earlier than some others, given all the freshmen.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think trips in any sport, away trips, are always good for team bonding and team chemistry. And not every team gets to go to Italy like that. So, if I recall, some of the scores from the scrimmages I was seeing over there were Maryland winning by 80 points or whatever it was. So that was the time to get their, you know, easy wins out of the way and make themselves feel good. But I want to see this team, you know, welcome all comers in the regular season. And I don't see why they should, you know, even in some of our tougher games, be getting blown out or anything like that. I think this team can hang with the best of them in a year where, if I look across the college basketball landscape as a whole, I just don't see a dominant team or a team that I think is like the clear number one, better than everybody else, which I think makes for a really fun year and should give a team like Maryland all the confidence in the world that, like, why not them? This is not every team has an experienced, skillful guard like Jameer Young leading your team, and you know, Dante Scott and then, you know, this talented freshman coming in. Not every team has that combination, so I'm expecting some big things.
Yeah, with the transfer portal and everything, I feel like we haven't seen a truly dominant college basketball team in a few years.
Right.
I feel like it's always been this kind of lots of parity. The March Madness and the NCAA tournament is always a crapshoot, but it's even more of a crapshoot the last couple years. Yeah. You mentioned Purdue. They're ranked number one in KenPom this year. And then you've got Michigan State at 13. And then Illinois, Wisconsin, Maryland kind of bunched up there. A little further down, you get Ohio State at 35, Indiana, Iowa, 49-50. There aren't, I think Penn State and Minnesota are the only ones that are like below 75. So they're all kind of top 50-ish, most of the teams in the conference. So like you mentioned, it's going to be Maryland's going to be right in the thick of it. But they're going to be battle-tested in a tough conference once again. And you mentioned kind of the seedings where maybe we're looking at 4 or 5 seed. I think that more than anything else determines how far they're going to be able to go in the tournament, because, you know, we saw last year you get in as an 8 or a 9 and it's like, well, you're matched up against the number one seed in the round of 32. Good luck. But if you're in there as a 4, 5, or a 6, you got a good chance to make a little bit deeper run, even if you're in there as like a 7 or a 10 where you're facing the 2 seed. So hopefully Maryland could do a little bit better than an 8 or a 9, get in there as with a chance to make a run to the Sweet 16 and maybe beyond, because it's been too long since we made a run like that.
Yeah, and it'll start with, like I said, not only playing the tough teams early in the year, but they should be viewing those as opportunities to really increase their seeding, because everyone knows that they're going to get good strength of schedule points and all that for and good resume points for just going through the Big Ten. But that doesn't differentiate them from other Big Ten teams or either really other Power Five teams who are also getting those strength of schedule points. They need to get a couple non-conference early season marquee wins, because even though I can't speak for the committee and how they pick, I would think some of them probably weight the later games more than the early season games. I know I do. If I'm looking at teams and picking them in the tournament, you know, I'm not as concerned with early season results as I am later in the year, but I think teams should be rewarded for playing those games and the ones that win those games. I don't think it should be a detriment or anything like that. So yeah, you know, you beat Clemson, you beat Villanova, teams like that, UCLA, like if you can get 2 out of those 3,
yeah,
you're really cooking with some grease.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. 2 of those 3 would be good, especially 1 of Villanova or UCLA. And Villanova, you're a little closer to home. Maybe that's easier. I don't know. That is also earlier in the year, though. I think facing UCLA in late December is probably a good thing, where you've got a decent amount of games under your belt already before you got to go out to Los Angeles right before Christmas. Those are the 2 big non-conference games, if you're going to circle anything, is Villanova on a Friday night, November 17th, and then UCLA on a Friday night, December 22nd. They do have two random conference games in early December against Indiana and Penn State. Not the toughest draw you could have gotten, but when they restart right after New Year's, January 2nd, home against Purdue. So if you're looking for a big game to circle to head out to in College Park, January 2nd, it's a Tuesday night against what may be the best team in the country.
Yeah, of course they give it to us while students are on break.
And right, exactly.
They're all going to be hungover from New Year's Day and New Year's Eve. That game does not set up well schedule-wise for Maryland. But I'm sure, you know, number one, if Purdue is still number one or close to it at the time, I'm sure it'll get its fair due. And yeah, those first two games, Indiana, Penn State, going to Indiana will not be easy.
Yeah.
At all. It's a very tough Big Ten opener, but yeah, I mean, I like our roster better than theirs, so it should be a good one.
Speaking of Indiana, we got the little bit of recruiting news is Derek Queen, who's kind of sitting out there waiting to commit. It sounds like it's between Maryland and Indiana, although Kansas and Houston have kind of snuck in there late. Are you hearing anything other than Maryland seems to be slightly ahead and we don't really know what he's thinking?
Yeah, I mean, from everything I hear, at least, it's Maryland, Indiana, with Maryland having a slight lead. I mean, Houston and Kansas, would you ever be surprised if a kid picked them out of the blue? No, but like, because I'll never say never ever since Trayvon Diggs told everyone under the sun that he was 100% picking Maryland, yeah. And I wrote a bunch of articles, and then he just last second, and apparently like legitimately last second, I don't know if he was doing it like to burn bridges with Maryland people or whatever, but I think he just was a kid that changed his mind and just didn't care about who that affected or whatever. Not that it's his decision either way. Not trying to sound like sour grapes with that situation. I'm just saying I learned from that situation as a young journalist to never, because anyone who asked me, you know, off the record, you know, what are you hearing, blah, 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 I'd tell him he's Maryland, like it's done. So, and you feel like an idiot when you're wrong about that. So, I'll never say never. But from what I'm hearing from the sources I trust, it's a two horse race with Indiana and Maryland. And hopefully he ends up in Maryland, because that would be Kevin Willard's biggest splash as a head coach in College Park. And no better way to kind of get a promising season this year off to a good start than by giving a jolt of energy, you know, looking to what we could possibly have next year too. So yeah, we'll have to see. I don't know exactly when he's going to make that decision or how he's going to do it, but probably most likely Twitter. And
Everything I heard, it's going to be before the early signing period. So we're talking pretty like any day now.
Right. That would have to be in the next couple of weeks. So yeah.
So that game against Indiana could be interesting on a couple fronts on December 1st.
Absolutely.
A month from now.
Yeah, for real. That would be... Imagine if he picked Indiana and then we had to go play them in Indiana. That would be some bad vibes.
Yeah. As long as we beat the shit out of him, I wouldn't feel so bad about it.
Well, then
make
that
me
would
feel
hang.
A little better.
Yeah. Even it out.
We'll continue talking about this basketball season as the year goes on, but things to look forward to as the year starts, as we're recording this tomorrow night, Tuesday night against Mount St. Mary's. So keep an eye on BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com, the message boards, and the site for articles by all of us. We'll be back at some point in the next couple of weeks to talk basketball. We're probably done talking about football for the year for the most part, but it's a good time to be a Maryland basketball fan. So it's all positive vibes here. But until next time, I'm Zach Kiesel. That's Pat Donahue. Follow us on Twitter @TalkingTerpsBSL and Roll Terps.